You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, a show which features conversations with Christians in leadership about the topics that really matter. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing Christian leaders on over 1,000 shows, and so hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and will join us again next week. This month, we're celebrating 1,000 episodes of The Leadership Show. As the host all that time, I'm putting together some compilations of past shows around particular themes. And this week, we're hearing from three guests who shared their story of starting something new, representing the many new initiatives we've featured over the last 20 years. The first voice you will hear is Ellie Gardner, who founded Kids Matter in 2017, a ministry that runs parenting programs. We will then hear from Jenny Costa, who founded Rubies in the Rubble in 2011, which takes surplus produce to make plant-based relishes and condiments. And finally, from Carrie Longton, who along with Justine Roberts, founded Mumsnet in January 2000.
At what point did the idea of Kids Matter come to be birthed?
Well, there's a couple of false starts, because when I was pregnant with my second child, so I have three children who are now 22, 20 and 14. But when I was pregnant with my second child, I felt God give me, I mean, this doesn't happen to me very often, but I felt he gave me a very clear word, which was parenting in the community. So by then I had qualified, I was specialized in children, and I was particularly interested in parenting. But I knew that parenting in the community meant take it out to where parenting matters most, sort of in more deprived communities. But when I had my second child, I really lost confidence as a parent and just thought, oh no, I didn't hear that right. That was, you know, bad pizza the night before, whatever, because I am no good at this parenting stuff myself. And I thought you really have to be very good at this and then you can go out and tell other people all about it. But clearly, if I'm going to be rubbish at it myself, I can't go and tell others about it. So I really buried it. And then fast forward 6 or 7 years, we went to live abroad and I had another child and sort of regained a bit of confidence and tiptoed back into, okay, Lord, what does this word mean? And I volunteered with my church, HTB in London, with Marika Brennan, who is now the co-founder of Kids Matter. And she was a family worker. She was working on the estate and she wanted to bring the HTB Parenting Children course to the estate. And I thought, OK, well, that sounds similar to the sort of thing I know God wants me to do. So let me go along and have a look. And when I saw what she was doing, which was she was knocking on people's doors, she was holding the baby, she made a big pot of tea, she brought everybody in. We sat around in a circle. We didn't all, I thought, you know, obviously we would wear lanyards and we would be the presenters of the course and then they would be the people that we were helping. And she didn't run anything like that. We all sat together, tea, coffee, big cake right in the middle, and everybody just shared of their own experiences, including her. And to begin with, as a psychologist, I was really uncomfortable. It looked like, you know, that's not what you do. Where are the boundaries? You don't talk about your own vulnerabilities. But of course, I was completely wrong. And just the whole way of connecting with people, drawing alongside them, sharing own experiences. And I thought, wow, imagine if we could have this happening in all the hard to reach corners of the country. What if in estates all across the country, there were little groups meeting like this? And then all we needed to do was bring the actual, you know, rigor that I could bring, the psychological rigor of the material to the program, so that what we would be doing would be going through, you know, psychologically well-evidenced parenting tips, but in this very informal way. So I started to do a piece of research evaluating the effectiveness of that program in the context of the rest of the Parenting Children course, because it was delivered in all kinds of other churches all across the country. So I did that part-time for 4 years. And before I knew it, I was starting Kids Matter and beginning to train other people, and the rest is history.
And just for the information of those listening, HTB stands for Holy Trinity Brompton, which is obviously
right.
A large Anglican church, West London, the home of Alpha and other things, but including some increasingly other courses like the one that you so wonderfully described. So fabulous. So I need to ask you, Ellie, because as a child psychologist, you'll be very aware of the great levels of mental health challenge that children and young people face. And I'm just interested, you chose, you know, to go to something. I'm not saying it's not psychologically grounded. I'm just saying you're facilitating lay people doing this kind of work rather mm-hmm. than engaging in that kind of area yourself. Has that been a dilemma for you or something that you feel comfortable with?
I think when I did the research, when I did the doctorate, what that really opened my eyes to was we've got a massive issue in the UK, which is we've got, as you said, a huge increase in mental health problems and with increasingly younger children, which is really alarming. And yet we've got an almost equivalent drop in funding. So in the last 10 years in the UK, we've seen an almost complete eradication of early intervention programs. And yet all the research shows that if you intervene early, then you can really prevent many of the problems that young people go on to experience. And when I was training, we did tons of, you know, just working in the community in a GP surgery or in a community clinic alongside health visitors doing 2 to 5 sessions with families, just sort of getting them back on track. All of that is gone. Health visitors are not able to do that kind of work anymore. There are no social workers of the old kind that would sit and have a cup of tea with a young mum. There are no clinical psychologists wandering around GP services. They're buried deep, deep into the NHS. So, okay, so the need is going up, I thought, and the funding is going down. You can't see people like me easily anymore. So we have to get help from the voluntary sector. And the church is the largest voluntary body in the country. So even if you're not a Christian, it makes sense to put it in the hands of the church. So with supervision, I'm very, very clear that we have to supervise lay people. They're not clinicians. We can't expect them to take on board, you know, extremely troubled families in the sort of red zone, if you like, of families that are on the edge of care or who are really struggling. But what the church can do and does do is meet the needs of those who are at risk and who may end up in the red zone if we don't get to them early enough. So they can provide an early intervention with the right supervision and support. And that's exactly what we do. So just putting it into their hands. I mean, to begin with, obviously we had to see if it worked. So we're very careful to do evaluation to make sure that we get the results that we would expect. And actually the results are brilliant, which is really a kudos to the church because these are all lay facilitators. And yet with the right supervision and support, they're delivering the program and continuing it on afterwards. But for me as a clinician, the other thing that is amazing about putting it in the hands of the church is that when the program's over, so a Kids Matter parenting program is 6 weeks, so you meet weekly for 6 weeks. And when it's over, when I see parents in the clinic, I had no idea what happened to them afterwards. You know, we did a good piece of work and then sort of goodbye and good luck. But with the church, that relationship continues. Now that they know you, now that they know that, you know, you are somebody that is non-judgmental and wants to come alongside, you can then invite them to Alpha, to your toddler group, to your carol service, to your urban farm outing, whatever it is. And that continuity reduces social isolation and makes an enormous difference. So I'm a real fan now of putting something like this into the hands of the local church. I think it really works.
That was Dr. Ellie Gardner, the founder of Kids Matter. We're celebrating 1,000 shows and this week hearing from guests who took initiatives. And so we turn next to Jenny Costa, who founded Rubies in the Rubble in 2011, a company that takes surplus produce to make plant-based relishes and condiments.
Now, I understand there was a newspaper article and then some spying surplus fruit and veg at a market that led you to your early actions. So tell us the story of how it all happened.
Yeah, quite random, really. I suppose my background, I'd been brought up on a farm on the west coast of Scotland.
All right.
And we are quite a sustainably minded family. It's a very small farm in the middle of nowhere. So my best friend was my sister, not really out of choice, but we are incredibly close. And as a family, we were always coming up with funny inventions and playing games together and thinking of new ways that we could do things. And my mother was a very sort of fantastic gardener. And because she loved what she was producing and she would make sure that her harvest would last the whole year, and she was always turning surplus into chutneys, jams, relishes, anything that would preserve the life of her harvest. But then fast forward, I went to university, I did a master's in maths, I ended up in the City of London. I went into a hedge fund. I didn't really think of what I was going into, it just followed everyone else. And quite soon after, I realised that I wasn't really passionate about finance. And I started looking around and trying to find out what my passion was and what my purpose was supposed to be. And one day, instead of biking into work, I took the Underground and started reading the Evening Standard. And there was an article about bin divers talking about how people were getting into the back of supermarkets and trying to take food out of the bins that were thrown away, but it had one day life on it or sort of nearing its shelf life, and they were being arrested or bins were being locked up. And it wasn't that I decided I wanted to be a bin diver, but it made me start thinking about the whole food supply chain and how we have unpredictable weather and unpredictable harvests and then unpredictable humans, and we decide what we want to eat. That's at 4 p.m. that day. And supermarkets that try and provide it in such a beautiful and plentiful way. And I started thinking of, it's a perishable product being food, what happened to the unsold? And it just got me sort of so excited by researching it. And the more I researched and realised how big the scale was environmentally, economically, but also this, it was sort of mainly this moral feeling that we have enough food to feed the planet, but yet so many are going without and we're wasting a third of what we produce globally. And I wanted to create a really fun brand that preserved food, that was a practical solution to targeting food waste and working direct with farmers, creating a market that would have otherwise been discarded, but also being a vehicle to talk about a message and to say, let's start cherishing food again, let's start protecting our resources and making sure that we're shepherds of everything that we grow in our planet.
Right, excellent. Well, I mean, this is a significant leadership challenge. I mean, obviously, one of the ways in which companies, charities start is someone gets a vision and then puts into practice. But, you know, from that point, you're still working in a hedge fund. What's the sort of time scale in terms of actually handing in your notice and saying, right, I'm going for this?
Well, I think everyone starts businesses in very different ways, depending on your personality. My personality, I'm very slapdash. I go with my gut and I sort of lead a lot on that. And I remember it was back in 2010 that I read the first newspaper article. It was 2010, November time. I, within that weekend, had already gone and visited fruit and veg markets at 4 a.m. in the morning, just from research and finding out about these markets and wanted to see it with my own eyes. And then found the cheapest fruit and the cheapest farmers market I could find around Christmas time to try and sell my products. And that was our first market was in the 18th of December 2010. Trialed the concept out with some fantastic women that I'd been helping and hanging out with, and we took a load of my mother's recipes, went down to the market, got a lot of their surplus, and we didn't do very well on our little market, but we sold out by 2 p.m. mainly because people were excited to try and get a Christmas present, and it was blowing a blizzard and a horrible snowy day. I still remember it. But I got such a buzz out of selling something that I'd made. I knew exactly what had gone into it, and there was a demand for it. And it was part of my story. And I knew then that I was going to hand in my notice. So at Christmas time, I went home, told everyone I was going to leave work, and handed my notice in the first day back in January. I had 3 months of a notice at work, and in those 3 months started planning. I remember telling work as well that I was going off to make chutney, and or any friends as well. It makes you sound like it's the sort of thing you do when you're retired. But people were really for it, and it was a big thing for my faith as well, because it made me think. I was 25 years old at the time, and the three sort of pillars of my faith of thinking, I know that Jesus is for me, and that he knows me inside out, and he knows the desires of my heart, and he wants me to prosper, and he puts things in your heart to go and follow. And that he'll never leave me. And then also that we were born for a purpose and we should go for it. And so when I sort of looked at all of that and thinking, really, I should just give this a shot. And if it goes terribly wrong, I will have learned a lot. But nothing's going to happen. Like, the world's not going to collapse underneath me. I'll still be supported. And so stripping that all back, it was really just the fear of man and the fear of failure that was holding me back. And so I just thought, go for it.
Well, it's brilliant to hear how you put things together in your head and went for it. So fantastic.
Fun challenge.
Well done you. So, I mean, so into the practicalities of chutney production and stuff, you're getting fruit and veg, or at least back in those days, I don't know whether things are the same today, but presumably you're dependent a little bit on the kind of chutney you can make by what the surplus is. Is that the case?
Yes.
So various recipes?
Yeah, so when we started, the City of London helped us put up a porter cabin kitchen on one of their wholesale markets because they wanted to help reduce the surplus or the waste on that market. And so the market ran from midnight till 6 a.m. We would arrive at around 6 a.m. and there was 160 different traders all trading by the ton of fruit and veg. And we would go and start chatting to them and take up any fruit and veg that was sort of on its last legs, really, that they couldn't sell onto a retailer because it couldn't sit on their shop shelves for long enough. And we knew that we had a day or so to turn it into a product that extended the shelf life. And the added value, and we could sell it on. So we were on that market for 2 years, and within those 2 years, markets are fantastic actually at being very resourceful, and there's nothing based on the size or the shape or how curly it is. They'll sell it until it doesn't really have a use. Whereas the waste that I wanted to really tackle was working direct with farmers that had supermarket contracts and things that were being discarded because it was the wrong shape or colour or size, and where I could see that it was still fantastic produce, it just might not look right. And so we started working direct with the farmers, and it's where we've been ever since. But the main ethos behind Rubies is to make great tasting products in the most resourceful way. So we've started making mayonnaises as well, which are not based on fruit and veg, but it's taking a byproduct in the supply chain, aquafaba, which is a sort of bean water, that's a byproduct of making hummus, and it has the same properties as egg yolks or egg whites. So we've transferred that into our mayonnaise recipe and started making mayonnaise working with these hummus manufacturers. So it started with fruit and vegetables, but it's really just about trying to challenge the food supply chain and saying we can make sure that we're never wasting anything within it and always seeing a new product and a new value in things.
That was Jenny Costa, the founder of Rubies in the Rubble. We're celebrating 1,000 shows in December, and this week hearing from guests who took new initiatives. And so we turn next to Carrie Longton, who, along with Justine Roberts, founded Mumsnet in January 2000.
So I met my business partner, Justine, at antenatal classes in back in 98, early 98. And she was having twins. She only made it to one class. I had my first child, Grace. At the time I was working in TV. She was working in journalism. She'd worked in the City. And we carried on meeting up, like many of your listeners will know. You carry on with this sort of clinging to the wreckage with these people, this sort of very disparate group, a bit like church, actually, people you would not normally meet, really, you know, you wouldn't come in contact. Anyway, long story short, both of us were struggling to make the current careers, my TV and her journalism, work with family life and husbands who were also working very hard. She went on holiday with one-year-old twins, came back and said, "I wish I hadn't asked you six. I wish I'd been able to ask the World Wide Web." Now, this sounds so obvious now, but there was no TripAdvisor, there was no Amazon, there was no Google. I've still got the email that says you've got to try this amazing new site called Google. That didn't exist. Peer-to-peer reviewing didn't exist. So basically the idea behind, and she said, "Would you like to join me?" By this stage, I'd stopped working in TV on my doctor's advice because I'd collapsed and was looking, but knew I couldn't, and I really respect people who can, but I knew I couldn't be at home full time. I just knew that wasn't an option, but I wanted to be, someone needed to be home now and again, and my husband never was. So long story short, that's how we started with a review website. And then we thought we'd put a discussion board up. So I'd ask a question and she would answer it. And then she would ask a question and I would answer it. Again, no Facebook in those days and anything like that. And then gradually, at one point, somebody called her with a question. She said, I'm going to answer you, but go online. And by the time, dial-up, do you remember dial-up?
Oh, yes, yeah.
By the time she got down and put it, turned dial-up on, somebody else had answered this question. So that was the beginning, really. We launched in March 2000 with a review, 250 reviews of pushchairs and a little fledgling board. And the plan was that we would build it up. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. Build it up. And everyone was flogging, you know, building things up and flogging them. And it was like the Wild West of the internet. And you
indeed.
Claim and all that. And then, of course, Boo.com crashed. Now, Boo.com was the first real online clothing. And everyone said, oh, clothes online, that'll never work. Comedy cut to 20 years later. But anyway, little did we know. Anyway, so we decided we weren't going to raise the money that we thought of and we hunkered down. And basically for the first 6 years, well, certainly my childcare people learned a lot more than I did.
Right.
I worked very hard for, we didn't actually, I think I took a salary, I took £5,000 home in about 2005, so 5 years in. Meanwhile, you know, I'm paying out proper nanny childcare wages plus another child's come along. And so, I think if you look at the graph of how we grew, it's teeny, it's very, very small. But we knew we were onto something. That's the, and I think what we learned from that is people would write and say, I wouldn't have got through the last 6 months without you. And so we knew there was a spark of something there. And we just needed to try and work out how to monetize that and also how to grow numbers.
Sure. So were there any kind of key turning points where you got to...
Well, one I wouldn't recommend. We got sued by Gina Ford in 2006, which I don't think allowed to talk about too much.
Okay.
We settled out of court. But long story short, we were the lead story on the news ahead of the war in Lebanon at one point.
Oh, well.
So wouldn't recommend that as a business strategy, perfectly honest. But actually, we doubled our membership overnight. And once we got sort of critical mass, the great thing about Mumsnet, again, I always say it's very similar to churches. If it works, you're quite evangelical about it. Mumsnet worked. You know, you came with a child who couldn't sleep. You went on and you said, my child can't sleep. And for whatever reason, could be eczema, could be teeth, could be whatever it was. Mm. And somebody had been there before you. Now, they might not. They give you some things to try that may not work. But chances are, by the time you've finished trying the things, they're out of that phase and onto something else. And it was this very... You know, it was that kind of, oh, I get you, in a way that people who weren't in that situation didn't get you. And I always think church sometimes, if it does it right, you want to just tell everybody, come on in, you know, God, they've got this thing and it's amazing. Mm. And I think that we grew really, we hadn't got any budget for marketing. We grew completely by word of mouth and a lot of press. Justine was, and I both worked in, I'd worked in TV, she'd worked in paper. So we had quite a lot of contacts. And again, there weren't many people doing what we were doing. So,
sure. What area of TV were you in? What area of TV were you in, Carrie?
I used to be a producer for Clive James.
I made
travel documentaries and TV shows, which I absolutely loved, and I did it for nearly 10 years. Yeah. But we all retired. I did the Millennium. The last thing I did was the Millennium ITV special with Clive, and he retired, and I retired.
If you were going to giving advice to someone who was doing what you sought to accomplish, that would be difficult, would it, in the sense that you weren't even sure you were doing it, quotes, the right way. You kind of gave it your best and things developed.
Yeah. I get to talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. I used to, certainly a lot more. I was very, very lucky in that I had a husband who had a job. So if they'd been relying on me to keep a roof over our heads and food on the table, we would have been on the streets.
Right.
And I think, so I was in a very privileged position. So when I meet people who have an itch to be an entrepreneur, but they have a proper job and their family or they rely on that proper job, I will often say, have you thought of going to your employer? You know, start working weekends, start doing the project weekends.
Yeah.
See if you can make it, get some traction. Have you thought about asking your employer to go down to 4 days a week and giving your business 1 day a week and gradually reducing it? Now, that's potentially not the right way of doing it. And there are people who, if you really have a hunch and you think you can do it, you can go out and raise money and pay yourself a salary. But it's not that easy, particularly not easy with women. I mean, there's statistics on how hard it is to get venture capital funding as a woman, particularly. And we tried at the beginning, and of course there was a crash, so we didn't get any. And actually, in the end, we never raised any money. We did it all you know, through getting profit and word of mouth and not taking a salary really for a long time, or not taking a large salary. So I would definitely recommend it in if you want to give that sort of thing a try. But I've met people before at events who go, yeah, I really want to make handbags. It's like, well, what do you know about how I love handbags? I get that you love handbags, but what do you know about manufacturing? What do you know about importing leather? What do you know about actually making it or marketing it? Well, I've got some money. I've left my job and I've got £70,000 and I want to make handbags. I'm thinking, please do not use that £70,000, yeah, unless you really know how to make handbags. Sure. So I think it's a bit like the same advice I give when people say, when's a good time to have children? And this is, I am being facetious here, just alert. It's when you get to the point when you might steal one. then's the time to have children, you know, not before. Yes. When you think, oh my gosh, I really want that baby. And the same with business. I think it's a bit like people say about acting, you know, it's kind of in you. It's not something you dabble with. And business, I think. But having said that, the other thing I say to you is, if you're a very young person, if you're at uni and you haven't got much to lose, someone else is paying the roof over your head and you've got a business idea, that's a fantastic time, I think, sure, to try something entrepreneurial, because it's, you learn as much from failure as you do from success. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's absolutely true. And what a better time to fail at a business is when it doesn't matter and you haven't lost the house or, you know, can't pay your mortgage. Yeah. And I think our business journey, if you look at it, was a series of, it's a rapid learning curve with, and a reiteration, you know, I mean, if you imagine when we launched, there were no smartphones.
Right.
You know, there was no broadband. You know, our initial business plan was that you would look at our reviews on a WAP phone. A WAP phone was going to be sort of like a brick, like a sort of, I guess it was probably similar to an iPad, but, you know, and then you might go into John Lewis and look at those and then we might give you a discount. And I mean, you know, it was all over the shop really. And it took a while to, it took eyeballs and growth to get to a point where we could actually make money from the site. And I think now there are so many more online opportunities, it's much, much harder to get those eyeballs.
So a reminder that in December this year, we're celebrating 1,000 episodes of The Leadership Show. And you've been listening to three former guests, Ellie Gardner, Jenny Costa, and Carrie Longton. In Ellie's case, there was a clear sense from God that she should do something, but it took a while for her to finally do it. Jenny's conviction was that it was not right that so much food should be wasted. Carrie Longton wanted to create an online community for mums. Now, of course, we know about them because of their development, which has led to many joining them and being employed by them. There are countless initiatives that are being launched every day by Christians who have noticed something that's not right and, seeking God's kingdom and his righteousness, have prayerfully sought to bring change. So my prayer is that these wonderful examples may be an inspiration to you too. If you wanted to hear more about these guests, go to Premier Plus, the app or website. Type in Parenting Expertise, Ellie Gardner. That's Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R. Or the Mumsnet Phenomenon, Carrie Longton, C-A-R-R-I-E-L-O-N-G-T-O-N. And Ruby's in the Rubble, Jenny Costa. I hope you'll join me next week when we'll be hearing from two guests whose ministry have focused on what Jesus commanded us to do, make disciples. Dallas Willard and David Haywood will be sharing their wisdom. Join us then.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.